When Burma held their elections on November 8th of last year, Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party won a resounding victory. The military stunned the world when, in February, the day the new parliament was to take their seats, they declared the election fraudulent and launched a military coup. Since that time, people in the country continue to languish with an 8 p.m. curfew, loss of livelihood, and brutal repression. I spoke with Tamara Doak, a Colorado woman who was working in the city of Yangon, and seeing that the situation was deteriorating, decided it was time to get out. What made you make the decision to leave?
Well, a couple of things. Most of my core group in my neighborhood were leaving or had already gone, and I was feeling more isolated because it really wasn't safe to go out much. And then one day there was a big explosion that shook my building, and I guess they blew up the Myanmar passport office, and that kind of threw me. And then I listened to the last town hall meeting that the American ambassador staged, and he said, basically get out as soon as you can by commercial airlines as soon as possible. And then someone was offering a charter flight for kind of a pet evacuation. So I left with, 17 dogs, a bunch of cats and two rabbits all in the cabin and a few humans. So I thought I'd get that flight to Bangkok and just go.
The ambassador was not arranging for flights. He was encouraging you to take commercial flights.
Right. They had done one relief flight at the end of March, like March 28th, and I got a seat on that. And then my board said, don't go. You need to stay and lead the school. And, you know, I didn't have to do what they said, but I decided to try to stay a bit longer. I was going to try to stay till June, but then things continued to get worse, and they're, you know, shooting people in the back and sniper shooting in the head and killing children and... You know, there's no money in the ATMs. It's, you know, they're closing supermarkets. It's just getting harder to live and manage.
And when the coup first happened, did you think it would go on this long?
The first couple of weeks were quite joyful. It was like a carnival atmosphere, everybody out in the streets. And I was going to the demonstrations and watching. They're very clever. There was like street performance and singing and dancing and just felt very, very positive. And I knew that wouldn't last. I knew that soon, you know, the military is letting them do their little protests and then they'll roll over. And that's what they expected. They didn't expect people to fight back as hard as they did. And so that made me really proud. When people were fighting back, I really didn't know what to expect. No one really did. Still, people don't know exactly what's going to happen.
During the election, did it seem that the balloting was going well and it was orderly and that there would be a transfer of power?
Yeah, it seemed fine, but it was February 2nd. I was waiting for that date to get, that's when they would seat parliament. I figured if we got to there, everything would be fine, but then of course, they did the coup on February 1st. I was nervous, sure. Aung San Suu Kyi won by a landslide. Not everybody loves her. You know, not all the people doing CDM now want to restore the NDL. They want some sort of a more inclusive government. Really, it's an experimental government. To have military and elected kind of fusion government is very unique. And, you know, it seemed to be working for a while until this.
And do you know what is the status of the political prisoners now?
They've arrested so many people. People are just disappearing in the night all the time. You know, even in my building, they installed new doors. And if I'd come home, curfew's at 8, if I'd come home at 8, which now and then I did, I tried not to. The old man would have to undo all the chains he'd put, and they put another security door. And people were quite terrified. So I don't know.
Even before the election, did you feel like there was fear of the military by Burmese people?
No. I think everybody was quite hopeful, especially the young people. You know, they had a taste of being out in the world again. And then the elections went through without a lot of bad things happening around it. I think people were feeling quite hopeful. I know that there was that worry until parliament got seated, but there was just a feeling of hopefulness and happiness, really.
And the press that I have seen, women are very much involved in the protests. Was that your experience?
Oh, very much. Even my teachers at my school would come in and make their signs and laminate them. And when they started shooting, they backed off a little bit. But women were very, very vocal and very active. And they'd have children out there in the beginning. And it was like a family. It'd be multi-generation. Probably the whole household would go, the grandparents, the parents, the children, everybody. And then also the gay lesbian community started coming out, and it was a sort of a venue for everybody to kind of project themselves out there, like, and ask for recognition.
And did you see it as a multicultural movement across ethnic divides?
Mostly, yeah. And I think people were embracing each other more, like, you know, the Rakhine people I suffer. And yeah, I saw them really trying to cross that divide and unify.
And when the coup began, were educational organizations shut down, or did people attempt to continue their work?
Well, that day, we were getting ready to go back to face-to-face instruction that morning. So that all stopped. But now the military is talking about they're going to open the schools and do 2 years in one, which is insane. But no, nothing opened up. And then people were terrified to move around. So everything pretty much closed down that day. You know, everybody stayed home just to see what would happen. And then people started mobilizing, and then protests started right away.
And what happens when the police shoot somebody on the street? Do they nab the bodies and whisk them away, or are families able to collect their family members?
Both. Sometimes they whisk them away, but even if the family members are able to collect the bodies, they're not able to get any paperwork to take them, and they can't get them cremated, so they have to return them to the morgue, where often they disappear, or they have a huge slit down where their organs are being harvested. And at first I thought that was just a terrible rumor, but now I'm thinking pretty reliable sources and pictures that they really are, and they're, you know, shooting children in the leg so they could harvest organs from children without damaging them. Really, really ugly. All the hospitals are non-functioning.
It's been my impression that irrespective of the elections and the political sharing of power, they called Burma a nascent democracy, that it was really aristocracy based with the generals that was really in charge of the country. Now they're solidifying their power through a coup as well, and it has more to do with the extraction industries. Have you seen that with jade and oil and gas, etc.?
Completely. You know, they're like, they remind me of the oligarchs in Russia. I didn't know how many things are military owned until after the coup, you know, when some lists were manufactured so we could all, you know, stop drinking our favorite beer, Myanmar beer. And like, you know, I had friends who moved out of their apartment complexes because they found they were run by the military bus, huge bus companies. And yeah, they had a lot of power. And actually, on my flight out, I was with a woman who worked for World Bank in agriculture, and she's trying to, you know, help people stop growing for the, you know, the drug industry and growing cotton and tea. And they've just had to pull everything out because that's how the military is making all their money. You know, they're in charge of that whole big drug culture. And these generals have always kind of run the show, but they're even now saying they want democracy. It's so ridiculous. I just think they don't care anything about their country people. They're just greedy. You know, they're the biggest producer of methamphetamine. And, you know, on Union Day, when they released 23,000 prisoners, the rumor was that they were recruiting these prisoners. We'll release you if you go and, you know, fight for us, and hopping them all up on methamphetamine. And it seems sort of likely now because the brutality of shooting children in their parents' arms, and no one in their right mind would do that. And these are very marginalized people who have nothing. So, you know, give them 5,000 chat a day and, you know, get them high. They'll go to any measures.
It appears as though part of the reason that it's hard to get information about what's happening is that a lot of the foreign journalists have left.
Yeah, a lot of the foreign journalists have left in fear.
Are there areas where they've restricted the airspace?
Technically, yes, but no. I mean, what what they say and what they do are completely contradictory. So they say there's no flights coming in or out, but then there are flights going.
And is it possible for Burmese people to leave?
Yeah, some are leaving to go to Thailand. Then they had a big surge in COVID, so now they're making really daily the regulations change what you have to do to get into Thailand. But there were several Burmese families on my flight. They can't get a passport, so they already have to have a passport.
So that pretty much precludes lower class people.
Yeah, it's only the privileged, you know, upper middle class Burmese who could get out.
Is there anything at this point that gives you hope for a resolution?
right now I'm just feeling very sad and not that hopeful. That's unfortunate to say. Eventually it will end in some way. The beginning, the coup, they were saying we're going to take power for 1 year and then hold another election. Now they've already said now 2 years. It's going to be some years down the road before anything. And so many people are suffering and, you know, losing their livelihood and starving. And
is it safe for your Burmese colleagues or your now former Burmese colleagues to have contact with you?
Yeah, I think so. I was never detained for any reason. I think they have to be really careful what they have on their phones. Like, you know, in Burma, they use Facebook for everything. People are very vocal on that, but now they're starting to stop people on the streets and check their phones. And so people are figuring out ways to hide what apps they have on there and what the information about the coup they have. But then some don't care. They're like, let them arrest me. I'll die for this. They're in a war, but only one side has weapons. It's not even a war, it's just a slaughter. It's like a genocide.
Because citizens are not allowed to have guns at all.
Right. Some of these ethnic armies in the north are a bit armed, but they're very rudimentary things. And people are making Molotov cocktails and throwing those. And they're very peaceful. It's very strange because it's Burmese people who are killing them, but the general population, these people are very peaceful. They wouldn't think of having a gun. I thought getting away I'd be relieved, but I'm not. I'm more wrought up and like angrier that no one here even, oh, a coup? No, I haven't heard anything about it. Like, are you kidding me?
Colorado's a million miles away.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I understand there's a lot going on in our country too. Like, we're in pretty big crisis here as well. But this, as the UN envoy said, there's no place in the 21st century for a coup. This is ridiculous. Come on.
Do you see any actions from the Biden administration or from the UN that could affect positive change?
I think Biden's done a pretty good job, you know, with the sanctions and at least speaking out. Some of my Burmese friends did mention that they were kind of happy with that, but they want more from the UN. Like, they want forces to come in. And, you know, I could sort of hear frustration in the ambassador's voice during these town halls. And, you know, he said, we can't do anything until there's something from the State Department. You know, we can't even plan another relief flight. I'm sure they're going to do one soon as it gets harder and harder to get out. There are people that have been there for 30 years, and they've been through this before. They're just going to wait it out. And some have gone to Thailand. Some are going to Sri Lanka. Some to Kathmandu to sit it out and plan to just go back as whenever they can.
Last week, the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, met in Jakarta in an emergency session to discuss the coup. The association has long pursued a policy of non-interference in its member states' internal affairs, but it is seen by the United Nations to be in the best position diplomatically to deal with the junta. What resulted from the summit was a 5-point consensus, including calls to end the killing of protesters immediately, begin dialogue between opposing groups, create an ASEAN chair to facilitate dialogue, give more humanitarian assistance, and allow the ASEAN chair to visit Myanmar. I spoke with Delta resident Saw Peter, who is from Karen State in Burma. He has been watching events closely and fears for his family and friends back in his former country. How are your family and friends? They're doing okay in Karen?
They're doing good, but they always have a worry about, you know, this situation. So they don't know what will be happen, or, you know, they always scare. And then even at night, who will be coming, you know, knock the door and broke in the door. And so they worry about that. Yeah, there is no safe in Burma. Yeah.
They're afraid that the military is going to come to their door at night.
Yep, military or police, you know, because they never know, because they heard that, you know, the other people, and also every night, you know, they go and see them. Maybe they can kill them.
And are people disappearing?
Yeah, some of their friends, some of them, they disappear without notice, something like that, you know. Yeah, but also they have to scare that they don't know why they're being seized, you know.
Why they're being seized?
Yeah, yeah. So they scare, you know. Even you go into those, you know, army camp or, you know, police station, something like this, they are worried and they have to pray about that. pray about that. Even they'll be give you a body, dead body, you know, come at dead body. So there's some really worry about that.
And is it safe for them to speak with you by telephone or by internet?
Sometimes, but not all the time. You know, we also don't want to call, you know, now we heard about, you know, they are listening, you know, between me and our relative. When we're talking, also we have to careful, very careful about that because of, you know, maybe they are, you know, listening in between. Only important things also, sometimes they don't have internet. When they have, you know, we just type in message and we call with by messenger. But also we have to be careful, yeah.
You have to be careful about what you say.
Yeah. What you say and what they say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe somebody will be listening, you know. It's really bad.
And how about the stores and the ATMs? Are the banks operating? Can they get food?
It's really difficult, you know. Maybe they can get it. Maybe they can get, but by limit, not all the time, you know. Also, we want to send money. We want to help. We want to help. We can do it, you know. We can do it. They said we can send this way or the other ways. But if we send, the money may be not going to them. The money will go to the military, those guys. We are worried about that.
So the money gets stolen in the mail.
Yeah. Something like that. We not deliver, you know. We knew about, you know, their situation, but we want to help them just a little bit, not much, about 200, 300. Also, they can use something for eating. I never send because I'm not trusting you.
For our radio listeners, I want to say that Karen State is a mountainous state that borders Thailand. If people from Karen were to attempt to cross into Thailand, they would have to cross over the Dana mountain range. Is this possible?
They have to try because, you know, they have to save their family life. Of course, you know, there is all the mountain around there. They have to crossing there. If not, maybe there, you know, there will be very big problem or for, you know, shelter or for eating or, you know, other problem. So they have to. Yeah, they have to.
They have to try.
Yeah, they try it. They have to go, you know, for their safety, you know, their safety. And the military always, you know, using their fighter jet and then bombing. So there is no way, you know, if they can't go in, they have to stay under the stone or, you know, they have to dig the hole and then they have to stay in there, even though under the tree also not safe, you know.
So they're hiding in the ground.
Yeah. They're hiding on the ground, but the ground also is not really safe, you know, because they don't know that one will be, you know, the bombing, you know, coming. So
is Karen the only place where the military is using airstrikes?
No, there is two. Because now is the important thing. They are fighting between, you know, a government, the military coup. And then that is Karen and Kachin, especially Karen and Kachin State, you know, Kachin State, the north side.
Mm-hmm.
Big fighting with a military coup.
And what are people fighting back with? Do they have weapons?
They try as they can, you know, because in the jungle, in the village, we always have nozzle loader. You know that? The gun, that nozzle loader that we're hunting, the nozzle loader.
Mm-hmm, the muzzle loader. Mm-hmm.
That is the only one thing they have. And then maybe they have some of the bow, something like that.
Bow and arrow.
Narrow, and they use in the jungle for the hunting, you know.
So they're in hand-to-hand combat with military.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good heavens. Is the border to Thailand open because of COVID?
Yep.
It is open.
Yeah, I just listened to the VOA.
Yes.
Voice of America, and then said the Thailand government will be open, you know, about border and then about 1 mile around there. 1 mile, so they will be open for the refugees, you know, the people who fled from the Burma. So
your state, Karen State, is relatively close to Naypyidaw, the capital, and Yangon, the previous capital and the largest city. Has your family seen city people fleeing the violence to come to Karen?
Yeah. They have to run, and then some of them also, they want to fight back, and then they don't know how to fight, and they have nothing, so they went to the border, and then
something like they went to the free zone, like you know, KNU or KNLA, that the region there.
Thailand established a free zone, or near the border.
Yeah, the border. Just not the Thailand, you know, for the people that who came to study about, you know, how to fight and how to use the weapon, they are all going to our current they call Grand River, Grand River Zone. So there is a safe, there's a safer place to they go in at that time. The Kachin River, those around those cities, they call those for the safe zone, you know, safe zone for them.
Safe zone. Mm-hmm.
So because of the military corps, that's right, that kind of sees them. So.
And the safe zone is protected by Karen and Kachin fighters?
Yeah, Karen Kachin fighter, yeah.
This past weekend, ASEAN, the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, met in Jakarta. Were you surprised that Senior General Min Aung Hlaing, who headed up the coup, attended instead of a foreign minister?
Yeah, you know, we have made it about that, you know. They're seizing the power, and they want to control everything. Yeah, before he go, also, we have, a lot of protests that, you know, he shouldn't go because he's the killer. He killed a lot of people, about 700 plus, as you remember, shouldn't accept him, you know. But he went there. I don't know what they're doing, but they have a lot of meeting. They have a lot of meeting about, you know, Burma, and then they got 5 agreement. But for me, you know, we never trust, you know, we never trust this guy, Min Aung Hlaing. Only he will be trying for his own power, you know, his own power. And then he want to control the government, want to control Burma. And then also we knew that he's like the fox, you know, he's like the fox, you know, he will be doing everything, you know, as he went for his power. So actually we don't like it. Also the NUG, the National Unity Government, they don't like it. Now NUG are trying to, you know, connect with on the war and then also Asian.
And the NUG wanted to be represented at the meeting instead of the senior general.
Yeah, this is.
But they were not.
Yeah, they were not, and then the RCM is not invited NUG. So that's the problem. Also, we not trust RCM either. We not trust in RCM.
You think there's foxes there also?
Yeah. Look at his, you know, agreement. You know, they have 5 agreements, something like that, but they never say that the relief, the Aung San Suu Kyi or, you know, the president or a lot of people that, you know, see in a prison or, you know, house arrest.
The NUG, the National Unity Government, called on Interpol to arrest Min Aung Hlaing upon his arrival in Jakarta, not only for the coup, but also the ethnic cleansing campaign against the Rohingya people in Rakhine State that displaced nearly 1 million Rohingya people over the last 8 years. Why do you think he was not arrested?
I thought that the Chinese, you know, CCP party, he is really, really support the Min Aung Hlaing. Also, the Chinese CCP party don't want the Western people or Western country are, you know, working for, you know, our NUG or, you know, CRPH, everything, you know. The first thing I think is, you know, because the CCP party, Chinese Communist Party, is really, really support him. And then also, I think RCM is under Chinese control, I think. Everything that the Chinese government said they will be followed. When they start a meeting, they have to release, you know, all the people, you know, people that they see, you know.
The political prisoners.
So, yeah, political prisoner. Mm-hmm. But after they come out, there is no.
I noticed that there were certain countries who asked specifically for the release of Daw Aung San Suu Kyi and the other 3,000 political prisoners. But in the end, ASEAN did not state that as a demand.
Yeah. This is, we know that ASEAN is not our side. I mean, they just follow Chinese government and then something like they support Min Aung Hlaing, you know, General Bozhu. So that's why we don't like it.
So China has undue influence.
Yeah. For Burmese, nowadays, Chinese and Russia, those two countries are really, really, really have
have them, you know. And then even though the fly zone, they allowed, you know, fly zone to shoot Kachin River, you know, they let them fly, you know. It's really bad, you know. They shouldn't use the fighting jackamarai for the river group, but they always use, you know, because they can't fight, you know, face to face, hand by hand. So if they fight, they lost. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of army soldiers are dying fighting with KNU or KNL, DIA. So without they using the fighter jet, you know, those two big countries are helping the military government. So
the European Union last week imposed travel bans to Myanmar and froze the assets of the 9 members of the junta's State Administration Council, as did the United States. Do you think that these go far enough?
I don't think so, you know, because not only 9, you know, not only 9%, you know, but they said that the 9 people is really, 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 you know, important things that they control it, you know. They cut out everything, right?
They're very rich.
Yeah, they're very rich, you know. In the poor country, they are the richest people. And then also their business in the country, and then they are very rich. So, but it's good, you know, good for, you know, European country or our United States or England. They did like this is pretty good, but I think not enough, not enough for doing that. And then the other general stay there, and they are in one group, you know, they are one group, you know, fight our country, fight our people. They just want to take control.
At any cost.
Yeah. So it's really bad, yeah.
What is the relationship between the NUG and the NDL?
The relationship with pretty good, you know, pretty good. When NUG came out, you know, before that they have a lot of meeting, and then you know that Dr. Sasa is a foreign minister for the NUG. They always contact with India government for our democracy. One thing, the India government also before that they sell a lot of the weapons to the Burma military.
So are there members of the NDL who are now part of the NUG?
Yeah, I think so.
It's like the government in exile that's asking for legitimacy?
Yeah, but, you know, one thing that we want for the India government is, you know, they need to support NUG like freely and then openly, you know, not only India, you know, the other countries also we need support to the Burma.
Did I understand you correctly that you said India sold most of the weapons to the Burma military?
Not the most of the weapons. They also sold it, you know. The first thing is China, and the second is Russia, and then the third is India.
And do we know that the political prisoners are alive? They've been transferred. Nobody knows where they are. Do we know that they are alive?
Not exactly, not all of them, but we knew some of them, you know, some of them are still alive, but some of them are disappeared. They never come out from the, you know, for the court or something like that, you know. But we can't say, you know, we can't say about, you know, every person, you know, was, you know, alive or something. We can't say about that, but we not trust, you know, we never trust the military court.
Did people observe Tingan, the water festival, on April 13th? Was there anything that happened that gave people hope?
not by the people. Only first day is from, you know, the military coup. That's all. But the people who want democracy, they not do it, you know.
So the military held a party and nobody came?
Yeah, only the people. That's it. So, you know, I just want to say, please open eyes for the Burma country, not only our ethnic group, you know, every ethnic group in the Burma have, you know, a big problem, and then they're worried a lot. Don't know how long they will be, you know, become for the democracy fighting and stay strong, you know, because they don't have any salary, you know, and then no money. Please, for our Christian, please pray for us, please pray for them. The military corps disappear, you know. Please help us. Please help them.
You've been listening to a special report on Burma and the recent military coup and continued violence there. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Kate Redmond.